Oh, it's pretty early in the morning, so I'm not actually walking. I'm laying on the air mattress. The air mattress is doom. It's early in the morning still. It's a little bit light outside. I was listening to Eton talk, and somebody happened to bring up as an example the solving of the school shooting problem. And it brings to mind the ultimate. What I had almost done, I call it almost tongue-in-cheek. It was supposed to be kind of funny, although I was actually being a little bit serious. Now I think I'm even a little bit more serious, and I think what ends up being true. People tend to do what's needed, even if it sounds bad, or they might get castigated for it. People will tend to do what's right anyway. When you start seeing kind of a growing trend, especially among people who have the resources to do it, you should take some real notice of it. The school education industry is kind of an interesting bear altogether. I said, I think it's mostly being propped up by people who don't see another way, or who are unwilling to innovate. You know, I'm sorry, you know, we always thought that college and schools were going to be filled with the best and the brightest. And that's always what school and education industry tried to tell you. Oh, these are the people who are smart. The people who are bailing from the institution are deeply flawed and wrong, and they don't trust, you know, and they're ultimately gonna regret not just doing what they're told. Now, this flies in the face of usually I will go back 100 years and say, how were things handled 100 years ago? Although it may not. It may not. I'm sorry, I'm really, really kind of congested too. We made a visit out to the Wettons, and we happened to run into the younger Wettons, Casey and Ann, and their young children. It's really interesting to see Casey and that's good. And they're kind of an interesting lot. Just cute. See, I mean, I don't find it interesting because they're really, you know, I think they're doing anything wrong. I just, you know, Casey was a kid, and time has passed, and he's gone on and done amazing things, and that's, you know, it's great. And it's really interesting to see how things are progressing. Anyway, we went and visited them and happened to ask about things like education, school, and the homeschooling the kids. Now, I think this is really interesting because his mom, at least my perception has always been that his mom was kind of the traditional school teacher type, and that her whole her whole attitude would be toward, you know, well, your kids need to go to school, they're not, you know, they're not going to succeed without school. I'm always amazed by people who really have lots of skin in the game when it comes to the success, you know, the ultimate success of the educational system, usually because they work for the educational system and there's, you know, that's part of the income of the family, if not the vast majority of the income of the family. That even under those circumstances, when faced with, sometimes not with their own children, but with their grandchildren, where they get to take maybe another, a little step back, that they're perfectly willing to have their grandchildren homeschooled. And you wouldn't think that would be so. You think they would be a little more, I don't know if it's the right word to use, but a little more loyal to the money that they've made. But I think that's also bigger than the fact that we're coming at a time where just getting paid to do something doesn't buy that kind of loyalty. I'll be the first one to say my time as a breadwinner still is a study in not being terribly loyal. There's had to be other reasons right now. I'm still working for Princeton University, not because I love my job. I love what I do. I'm terribly conflicted about what I do. I'm thrown into things. Actually, I think I probably do a pretty good job. I think other people see that I do a good job. I don't think that particularly. Although I see things where it's like, more pull their head out of fire on that one. Anyway, I get basically paid for keeping things alive. And keeping things going. And the assurance that I'll be able to do that into the future. Hopefully I'm not being too cocky about that. I don't. I'm really grateful for the insights and the ideas I get from other people, and I'm grateful for their input because they often have the answer, and I don't. Now I might run the thing ultimately through, but I'm grateful for the input of other people because other people end up having really good ideas that maybe I didn't think of. And they end up being the solution that we think. And when it comes, well, you know, when push comes to shove at the end of the day, go with a solution that works. Or if something works, that's a fine solution. You can sit there and you know, pick at it and say, well, we should go differently. And you go, well, you know, I don't care. It works. And that's a big part of just being pragmatic. You know, when people go, they were giving me a hard time. There were some things with my phone that I made some changes to it. I thought I liked them, but then it's supposed to be getting the text messages. They don't come up. They don't notify me at any level at all that I got a text message. Just none. So I have to go out and actively look for them. And you don't actively look for these things. But my older phone does a better job of what I want it to do. I think it's more simple. God, I'm doing a simple thing. Anyway, so that isn't what this is all about, except to say that sometimes we just go down an unexpected road. It may be pragmatism, it may be stuff like that, you know, and regardless, So we were over at the Wettons. They're homeschooling their kid, and share a little bit of our homeschooling experience with them. You know, Lisa got caught in the trap of me saying, "Hey, we should homeschool." I don't think Lisa really wanted to. I think she enjoyed the fact that she could send the kids off to school and not have to worry about them. That's just Lisa. You know, she's the daughter of God. She can behave however she pleases. And I hope I rarely express any opinion even about her motives. She can question my motives whenever she wants. You know, that's as far as I'm aware of, that's exactly what my job is to have my motives constantly questioned. And whether something's gonna work or not, whether it's a waste of money or not. But I don't do it in return. I don't know if that's good, but I don't do it. Lisa can spend money and spend her time and on whatever she wants. But like I said, she's the daughter of God, not to be questioned on much at all. Anyway, so, homeschooling was tricky for her. You know, we would do it sometimes. Or no, not we. I don't know who we is. She would do it sometimes. At other times she wouldn't, and it might be for various reasons. I always thought we were kind of using school as kind of a kind of a punishment. If our kids weren't doing well in homeschooling to her level. I did say that I thought the right way of handling homeschooling was kind of unschooling. Don't just bring school home, you know. Don't use the same textbooks. Don't use the same stuff. Now, Lisa didn't do that. She pretty much just was the kid's school teacher, which I never thought was the right way to approach it. But that's neither here nor there. She handled it the way she handled it. And yeah, the whole point was, if you weren't doing the work that needed to be done without making mom's life miserable, you'd find yourself back in school. And we used all the, at least I used all the tropes, salt mine, you know, hell, to describe school. And then went on to house for high school, which is an interesting take on it altogether. Anyway, I remember on September 11th, 2001, that was when planes were being flown into the Twin Towers and into the Pentagon, and all that stuff was going on. I was playing school teacher. I don't like to think that I don't see myself as a school teacher. Anyway, I was teaching school, I guess, or at least doing that role, or trying to, that year, that school year, and it happened to be when 9/11 happened. And it was really interesting. There was a decent number of parents who came and got their kids and pulled them out and took them home. And it was like, well, that's not, you know, I'm sorry. I don't know why I was being particularly rational. But I think I was trying to be rational when I said, you know, what is the likelihood that terrorist act was going to happen at San Juan School, a very, very tiny school in the middle of nowhere. You know, most people say, oh, Tooth and Carry is in the middle of nowhere. And you go, oh, nothing like San Juan, which is 30 miles further away from somewhere than different period. Anyway, so I always thought that was interesting. But now I am seeing it more as kind of a, I don't know if it's psychological or deep-seated truth coming out, and I think it's a good, I think it's a good impulse. More of these people, if they have resources at all to do it, and people are, more and more people seem to be finding the resources to do this, are homeschooling their children, you know, not sending their children to school for education, doing it through other means. I think this is a harbinger for the future. Do I think it's going to happen quickly? No, I really don't. Although I'm terribly surprised when things that I think are just kind of a slow trend all of a sudden just explode. You know, schools are really becoming a place that services more the children of school teachers. You know, now school teachers' kids tend to get a better education than other people do. Can I be honest? When it's your friend's kid that's kind of getting it, oh, that kind of reminds me, I got reamed that one year of school teaching. I had one of the other school teachers' kids in my class, and I wasn't very, I didn't like her kid, and I thought he was a flake, serious flake, but kind of a obnoxious flake, and I think he felt he could be obnoxious because his mom was a school teacher, and that gave him special cachet, right? You know, he was one of the elite, I called his mom and said, I got a real problem with his kid. And boy, she just let me in there one. For saying, you don't say that. As a school teacher, you never say that. Especially if you're another school teacher, you don't do that. You know, your job is to do something else. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, and it was really indicative of the fact that school teaching, I don't think is really a job. Because I treat it as a job. It was ultimately by mutual agreement. I didn't want to do it anymore. But the administration of the school really didn't want me either. Now there was a couple of reasons why, you know. I don't think it was just me. They didn't want me. I think they really needed to get rid of my position too. And it was nice that I didn't put up any resistance. School teaching isn't just a job. It is almost a culture. You know, you are supposed to pour your soul into it. I think that's really drilled into potential school teachers by teacher education program. I think it's essentially disingenuous. I don't think it's right. I don't think it's very good either. I think it's anyway, I work at school principal. Hopefully, he'll remain nameless. I've had dealings with him before as a student, actually. He's been in the education racket for a long time. And when he basically told me that I wouldn't be, that my contract wasn't going to be renewed, and after I said I wasn't even planning on asking to renew it, I was going to, you know, I'm going to, he's like, oh, good. So, it's really interesting. I find people are interesting when they find out that they don't have to be your boss anymore and you don't have to be their underling. Isn't it really interesting? Every time I put in my resignation, the relationship between us changes and it's much more, cordial, and you'll get a lot of, a lot more, well, it's really candid. It is, but it's kind of a relaxed candid. He said, I feel like, you know, you really suffered for not having done, student teaching, or, you know, for first semester of college. He said, you didn't do student teaching. And I said, no, I never had any intention of being a public school teacher. This just kind of came up and I have the credentials and the license to do it, which is kind of a fluke. I've always kind of lived off of flukes, and I'll be honest, I don't think I have ever gotten a job by doing it the traditional way. I've always kind of been a weird alternate sort, you know, like, anyway. So I didn't think much. In fact, I kind of poo-pooed what he was saying by saying, well, but I've been acting like a school teacher for a full school year. Why would be a student teacher for one semester, for half a school year, really been that thing? And I think he was kind of correct. Although, I don't think he took fully into account the whole teacher training education time. You know, it's a bachelor's degree to begin with, so you're going to be doing it for four years usually, and the fact that it really is kind of a cultural thing. It isn't, probably one of the deepest, multi-generational career paths anymore. Is school teaching, you know, I've seen movies where people say, I'm a third generation cop, or I'm a third generation firefighter, or stuff like that. I said, I don't think these things are so prominent now today, it's outside of education. You will see somebody who says, oh, you know, my grandmother was a school teacher, my mom was a school teacher, and I'm going to be a school teacher, you know. And there's a certain, I'd say a pretty decent percentage of kids going to school who that's what their plan is, you know. They've been around school teachers a lot. I always thought that it was kind of a default thing. Well, I don't have anything better to do. I can't think of anything else to do. The only thing I know is being a teacher a student in a public school, and all I have exposure to as a career are teachers. So I'm just going to fall to being a teacher or rise to it or something. And this isn't to really denigrate that choice. You know, I'm not, I don't think people are lesser for being school teachers. But let me tell you, it isn't just a job and the people who are in it have been trained and it's been definitely inculcated and kind of burned into their aptitude that school teaching is really kind of a higher calling. And, I am a person who trying to pass on things to other people, trying to bring wisdom to other people. That's a good thing. I mean, these recordings are the beginning of it. The things I write are kind of the more formalized version of doing that. I think that's the important thing. I think when you get sucked into the culture of school teaching, and that is that you show up at school, you know, at some ungodly hour of the morning, you know, work on this, work on that to make your environment or your curriculum or your presentation this amazing thing. Or if you some people are just amazing at getting up and explaining things to people. There's a certain amount of talent to it. Some teachers have it, many teachers don't. I think the ones that kill themselves trying to get up to that level, you know, you have to have some kind of a grudging respect for them. Although, I think that their efforts should be put more towards family. I'm sorry. I think family is far more important than being an institutional school teacher on any level at all, including being a professor. Too many people let their family languish in favor of this cultural thing. And the greatest thing that such a person, a kid, can choose to do is to also choose to be a school teacher. And that kind of makes up for all the fact that you spent all of your time at school. We're not kidding. You know, you'll stay there until 7 o'clock at night. If there's some kind of sports activity or some kind of booster club, you'll go and you'll do all that stuff, you know. And being a good parent is almost like being the ultimate teacher's assistant, which I always found sickening myself. You know, there was school and then there was life. I didn't feel like school needed to be life, but as a school teacher, you almost surrender your entire life to school. And I wasn't like that. I never had the intention of being like that. If I would have been in a teacher education program, I would have washed out. In fact, I did. You know, I was in early childhood education, and I did not, you know, and I didn't, I didn't rise to the challenge. I didn't put that first. I put other things first. And I don't know at the time if that was, you know, if it was a good thing to do, but I did it. And, you know, money came first. And, you know, too much pressure, I got sick. Whatever. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm a good person or a bad person. You can say, oh, no, that sounds okay to me. You know, well, I might be sugarcoating it. Anyway, so I find it interesting because, yes, if school ends up being kind of this culture and there's an industry built around it, it's kind of almost self-perpetuating. You know, it's almost you don't, don't. You don't question that. And then I think it's a little bizarre because the school teacher will go and they, school teachers have a bad habit if they're not teaching school anymore. My mom had a friend who was a school teacher and then started a business. And the problem with school teachers is that they usually, aren't very wise about other things. They throw themselves at it. They'll work at it for 5,000, you know, for 5,000 hours. I'm sorry for that thing. They will work on it 24 hours a day. If their kids want to see their parents, they have to go down to, the shop then, you know, and the funny thing is these businesses that are set up by school teachers who just say, you know, I don't want school, but you know, something bad, there's bad blood at school. They would still be a school teacher today if they just didn't have to deal with one person or another or one administrator or another. And, you know, and they'll take it out to a business and they will pour themselves into that business. And the funny thing is most of the time, it's a business that's basically, school support. They are so inundated with the culture of it. It's almost like, oh, here's the fun stuff. You know, I'll sell the cute little pencils and the Apple pencil holders because, you know, you're supposed to bring apples. The old thing was to bring apples to your teacher. So the teacher often have a ceramic apple on their desk. You know, teachers are number one, and they will sell things that, like, you know, cute personalized elementary school type teacher things, a little name thing that, you know, has the teacher's name and a cute little script. And, you know, everything looks like lined, early lined paper and, you know, like a notebook with a little spiral bound thing on the side. Anyway, you know, and it kind of ends up being something akin to that. Now, if they're like art teachers and stuff, they may do the art thing, but it'll just be kind of extension of either teaching as a lifestyle, as a culture, or it's an expansion of what they really wanted to be doing as a school teacher in the first place, you know. It ends up being a showcase for interesting former students, you know. Anyway, so, and they'll put their whole soul into it. They will sink all their money into it. They'll borrow tons of money to do it because that was expected as a school teacher. You're expected to give up your soul. Even now, the tax regimen is really, you know, when you pay taxes, if you are a public school teacher, you are given a certain amount of, it's not quite a stipend, but it's a tax credit for the expectation that you're going to be spending a lot of your own money doing this you know, spending it on your kids at school. Even though, I'm sorry, your school is absolutely flush with money. It's crazy. No legislative agenda is more just universally given over. You know, you're the federal government and your state government, if they don't have something stopping them from going deep in debt, they will go deep into debt, and they'll do it through education. No, yeah, they're, who dare question, you know, education getting whatever they want, and then yet on top of this, they have the expectation that school teachers will spend a good proportion of their own money that they're getting paid, pouring it back into school. What an amazing mindset. What an amazing thing. Anyway, so you've got this whole thing. So it's really telling that, there is being a slight sea change. People who have the resources to do it, they are tending to homeschool. And this is growing. Now, if you're a school teacher type, it's going to be more along the lines of, well, we're going to do this like a school teacher would do it. You know, except we'll do it at my house. We'll have the tests. We'll do it for a certain amount of time, and then kind of a buzzer will go off, you know, I'll put a buzzer, and we'll stop doing English. We'll do math instead, you know. And I've never been a big fan of that. I thought one of the biggest problems with school was how school was done. That it actually, you know, I mean, people are going to learn. You have to understand that first and foremost. People will learn. And you can stick them in a cardboard box and shout obscenities at them all day long, and that kid will learn something. He may just learn that he hates cardboard boxes, or that obscenities are the way you communicate with each other with a very loud voice. You know, we are learning creatures, and we will learn sometimes. I know for myself, I'm incredibly bad. And my biggest problem. I have discovered this, and I see it as almost a root of all of my things, is the fact that I have no recall. You know, so here are these recordings that I never listened to. I really struggle with these things, and sometimes it comes out in very unpleasant ways. When people say, "This happened to us before," what? I can really learn anything from it. You go, I'm sorry, I forgot to write down what the insights I wanted to remember, because that's what I depend upon in short explanations of what should be done. It means that I tend to document what I do better and in my profession. Right now, or in the way I make money right now, that's a really good thing to do, because every situation is different. How you handle it's really different. So you kind of want to have a guide to go by. I got a pretty good guide. Anyway, I'm trying to circle this back around to what my original thing was. We talked about econ talk. It got about the fact that I am growing to trust trends more than I used to. That there is probably more wisdom in real trends. Now you have to be very careful. There is a whole lot of conjecture, especially from intelligentsia. There is a whole lot of weird research that I think is very slanted. And if you take a step back and you just kind of look at how the river, the larger river, is running, how things are kind of flowing, I think you'll see a lot more wisdom out of that. Now, once that stops working, I think someday it will stop working. You know, the current love affair fetish with LGBT, which I think is hilarious grouping of people, because honestly, these are people that don't really have anything much in common at all. And to say we're forming a community around this. I'm forming a community on how I prefer to have sex. And you're going, that's really a stupid thing to form a community over. Isn't that a private matter? And it's like, no, no, I don't want it to be a private matter because, you know, it works better for me if it's not. Or transgendered, which I'm sorry, has nothing to do with acting gay. It's a totally different thing. It's almost more of a mental illness where somebody wants to be something that they're not so strongly that they actually take action on it. You know, they'll actually try to alter themselves to be the opposite gender, where being gay and lesbian is all about sexuality. This other thing really doesn't have a lot to do. It may have something to do with it, but it's very different. And so having these people together is really weird. I would, you know, I had an epiphany not long ago where it's like, you know, I still use the word deviant sometimes, which really offends people. How dare you call me deviant? I'm just like anybody else. And you go, that's not what deviant means. It means you've deviated from something. Now, most people think that, like, LGBT people deviate from some social norm. And you can certainly look at it that way. But that's becoming less and less true because a big part of those people and what they're trying to accomplish and a forming of a community of very strange people around it, that's rude to say that they're strange. Strange bedfellows around it. Because honestly, a transgender is not necessarily a gay person at all, nor do they have much in common on any level at all, except for this deviant. They're doing a pretty good job of trying to establish what they do as a new social norm, therefore they are not deviants from that. But my definition of being a deviant, and it's pretty easy just to add a little more to it, it's deviance to the straight and narrow path. The path that Christ has ordained is the way to get back to God by following Him. And yes, I'm sorry. Gays, lesbians, and homosexuals continue to be deviants of that path. And in being strident about it, which is kind of what they have felt like has given them the most ability to change the cultural and social norm, the more they do that, the more they become, I don't know if strident is the right word for it, but the more they become purposefully deviant. You can fall into it. You can go, well, I chose to have sex with somebody who was an opposite gender, and it was so much fun, and I really prefer it. You know, sex is so hard for a lot of people of opposite genders. There's a whole lot of things mixed up in it. Girls have these weird expectations, or guys don't. They just want to do something, and, you know, the gay lifestyle came of this kind of free and easy, no holes barred, no anticipation of anything more than just a physical pleasuring of each other. So would gay sex be easier to get as soon as you found kind of a little den of gay people? Yeah, it'd be really easy to get, you know. You're going to find people, you know. If you just want to get sexual pleasuring done, that's definitely the right group to go and see. Because as long as you're willing to pleasure them, they're probably pretty willing to pleasure you, and it's all kind of, it's all consensual, it's all free, it's all stuff like that. Now, it's totally off the rails when it comes to the straight and narrow path leading to eternal life and exaltation. That's not the and. Eternal life is exaltation, however. Anyway, so that's when I say deviant. Deviant means this. And you go, yeah. It says, and that's, I will continue to use the term, although I may have to explain it. But I think it's a reasonably short explanation. Anyway, so you see this, I'm sorry, I'm going to switch gears again and try to get back to the fact that homeschooling is, I don't know if it's ever going to be particularly mainstream, but more people are doing it, more educated people are doing it, more people who have, who feel like they have the resources to do it. And I think more people who under normal circumstances would have said, I don't think I have the resources to do it, are finding ways to do it and more options on how to do this are coming about. And is the school industry fighting back? Oh yes, tooth and nail. You know, it's very hard for like a school teacher who is totally indoctrinated into the school industry and being a good tool of that school industry. You know, you are the frontline practitioner. You are given the kind of respect that medical doctors get, you know, and this is something that's been cultivated over the last 150 years. I used to say 100, but things have changed since I've been an adult, and I'm in my 50s now, so. It's really amazing to think back and tell you how much time has passed. And I used to say 100 years ago, but that's not far enough. We have, you know, this kind of school teaching professional type of thing has lionized, you know. Nobody is less questioned than a school teacher. You know, how dare you go to a parent-teacher conference and not as a parent sit there and just grovel at that teacher. I mean, that teacher's probably 25 years old. Grovel at that school teacher's feet and say, how can I help you better educate my kid? Because there's no, you are the only way that my kid will ever find them. And you get those wonderful, you know, people that I really respect have really said, oh, while my kids are in school, I spend half of my time at their school. I'll spend the evenings at the school supporting the boosters, especially if my kid is in sport. And you're going, you know, is it a bad thing? No. But maybe, you know, are you basically spending time with your kid? Oh, you're supporting their activities, and you're going, that's different. Because sports isn't what your kid's going to be doing after they turn 20. You know, a very, very small proportion of kids go on to do this. If they go on, they do it at college. It becomes a real problem because if you're going to support your child in college sports and in college things like that, that's a little weird because you're actually stealing that attention away from other children you may have who are still in their local school, and by golly, you better be supporting their sports and their clubs and their activities. And you've got to say at some point, I can't do all this, you know, unless you're just desperately rich, you know, or, you know, you just got lots of spare time on you. And most people who are actually living don't have that. Anyway, And the whole fact that when you go off to college, you're supposed to go off to college without your parents around. That's supposed to be a big thing. They can come for the football games and stuff like that if you're playing in a football game or in the band or something like that. But otherwise, you're really supposed to kind of not hover around your kids so much, which is a weird thing. You know, parents feel conflicted by that. And it's like, so, the implications of all these attitudes that are really untenable, can I be honest? I think people had more sense in the past, what was possible and what was not. And I don't even know if it was a sensibility, except to say they just couldn't do it. You know, there was too much work to be done. They sent the kids off to school, and that was almost kind of a tricky social climbing act, because it would have been better if you kept the kid at home and made them work at the family farm or at the family business to keep feeding the family. That's what partially what all this is about. And it's only been relatively recently, in a generational way, that most children, almost all children, have the possibility of not being involved in the family business. Of course, families have suffered horribly for this. I think there's more poverty because of schooling. Schooling has sucked up too much time, and it's funny because it's supposed to be time to keep the kids sequestered at school so that both of their parents can go out and work full-time jobs. Of course, the school also says, isn't it great that if you choose to be a school teacher, it's one of the benefits of being a school teacher. If you choose to be a school teacher, you can, it's almost like, being the one that says, oh, I'm involved in all my kids' activities. I'm a very active, participating, involved parent because, as soon as they're done with school, so am I. And you're going, no, you're not. Because of the cultural thing, you will make your kid go to school when you go to school at 7 something in the morning or 6:30 or whatever. And they'll have to sit around in your classroom while you're doing study, while you're shushing them and trying to keep them busy and quiet so you can do your work. And after you're done, there's all the extracurricular activities that form an afternoon. And the way you're going to have to pour yourself into that, and your kids just kind of automatically end up kind of doing that too, because either they are participating in the sport, and by golly, school teachers' kids are going to be able to participate in sports no matter what, even if they suck at it, because that kid's there, and that's kind of the whole thing. You know, if you're going to have the whole package, the school has to accommodate. So, that's why you will have no other ally besides other school teachers who really understand all of how difficult your job is. Don't be questioning the fact that you've got an interesting job. My question is, I'm not unhappy when we have smaller schools and smaller attendance, and we don't need these kids anymore. And, I work at a university right now, and they'll bring up the fact that we're like losing, they'll say there's fewer kids coming up from high school, and we'll all say that, you have to understand it's all about the school indoctrination. This means there are fewer children, and that's untrue. There are not fewer children, probably. Although there is a trend toward that, too, I think it's more exacerbated by the fact that if you're getting these statistics, and you are, if you're getting from your local school district and saying, well, here's our graduating class this year, and it's smaller than it was last year, and the year before that, you have to understand that not only is that, well, people aren't having as many children as they used to have, that may be true, and I think statistically that's proven out that is true. But there's also more kids that aren't going to school. They're being homeschooled. And those kids are not really being counted. Most, there are a handful of universities who see the trend of homeschooling and see it as something to be catered to. But they are very few because the numbers still are not particularly big at all. Other colleges have interesting entrance exams. It's mostly through standardized tests, the SAT and the ACT, which anybody can take. You don't have to take them through school, though you predominantly do. You don't have to. You can take them. You can take them as a homeschool, of course. And a lot of schools, if they base their admission strictly on that, then you're fine. You know, it's like, well, we don't do it by the grade that you made in school. Grades have mostly been dropped as an entrance requirement to a lot of state schools, at least ours. I question the reasons why. And not that people at the university don't see what's happening. They certainly do. But there's this kind of built-in thing about, oh, God, you know, it was interesting. We had homeschooled one of our kids, Matt. He was autistic, so he was getting special stuff from the local school. We didn't homeschool him at all. He always went to school. And doing something. One of my friends from my do-gooder phase, which I was trying to get back into, doing the cooperative extension home economist job. Was almost kind of going back to trying to be kind of a do-gooder, which I should have known that I'm sorry, that time, that ship sailed. I had to make more money. And, I need to continue to make that much more money. One of my do-gooder friends, social worker, would happen to be at school, and, She is very invested in the public school arena too. And she really railed on homeschoolers. Oh, they just keep their kids at home because they don't want to have to wake up early in the morning to get ready for school. You know, and it's like, oh. And then she noticed that Lisa, my wife, the daughter of God, with him, and boy, she has seen her backpedal so hard. Oh, but not you. I wasn't talking about you. I mean, other people. And it's like, and Lisa did. Lisa really took an affront at that. How dare you say that I'm doing this because I'm lazy? And you go, you know, it's a lot of homeschooling families feel like if you just send your kid off to school, you're being the lazy one. You know, passing off your quasi-parental responsibilities for the education of your kid to some institution that is, you know, depending on how you feel about your local school and about even the individual teachers that are touching your child, how you feel about them. In this day now of social justice, there was an interesting thing. I've been looking at doing my PhD, and I still don't know. I don't really know if I'm going to do it. I don't see the point of it. At this point, if I did get my PhD, almost all the jobs that the PhD that I would be getting would merit me are kind of, you know, don't pay as much as what I'm making now, which is sad because I'm actually making less now than I made 5 years ago. I'm probably going to build back up to it eventually, but until then, you know, what do we do? Anyway, everything a PhD, you know, now I was going to get it so that my writings would have more cachet. That the things that I say, they'd say, oh, well, he's a person who's educated. You know, having a PhD after your name on a book cover, can I be honest, sells more books. But at a very large cost. So, you know, I've never been much of a marketer of any of my writing. I put it out there, and I think people read it, but it's not, you know. I think I mostly have a bit of a schoolrooms or a lecture halls worth of people who look at it, and I think if it explodes and becomes an amazing thing, it'll just have to explode and become that thing without me having a PhD after my name. There's plenty of PhDs that I know who do okay without really bringing up the fact that they're a PhD. That's become kind of a thing lately, is that you're not supposed to hang your hat on that credential. And if you do, people kind of look at you and go, oh, well, they think you're all that. And you go, that's the whole point of getting a PhD, is to say you're all that. You know, that's the whole point of the thing. If you're not putting it on the end of your name, why did you bother getting it? You know, to make $40,000 a year when I'm making, you know, 65, 67. And in the past, made 77. 10,000 more a year than I do now. Anyway. Regardless, happy. It's interesting to see how trends just kind of happened. And there was this Econ Talk, which I recommend everybody. Econ Talk is very interesting. Of course, people talk about the fact that it's how Les Roberts feels, and you go, no, it's usually he'll grab people who are selling a book. He's got a book out there that's trying to sell. So he treats it just like, you know, there's somebody who wants to talk about their book. And, of course, you know, he's Russ Roberts. He's going to do it. He's gonna ask questions, but those people who are trying to sell their book are trying to sell a book. And, it may or may not be something that Russ Roberts agrees with. So, it isn't like, a personality cult. Econ Talk, I don't think has ever skewed personality cult. Although it's hard for anybody who's doing it and being asking questions not to interject themselves into it. Anyway, so it came up that, I don't even remember what got me started on this. I don't remember. I'll just keep talking. I keep talking on a recording. As I keep talking, I can't clear my mind enough. I remember what Anyway, so it's gone where it's gone. I need to get up and get ready for it's Friday. I've got a little bit of work to do. Hopefully get something else kind of pushed out and get things kind of going better. It's just interesting to see how the stream gradually changes course, and it's usually gradually changing course in probably the way it should. And I think that's the primary reason why God hasn't come down and started wiping people out. It's why we don't have the equivalent of a flood. You know, that it's like, well, I'm going to wipe all this out. We're going to start over. Of course, the next one isn't about starting over yet. Although it kind of is. The millennium is going to be a beautiful time with good people on Earth without all the problems. And so it might be a good analogy to look at. Anyway, so. When we see that sea change, like the whole homeschooling thing, the more people who are homeschooling, it's kind of a, you know, once people figure out that they can do it and there are other options, more of them are taking it. Now, not a huge proportion, but enough to say, wow, this is actually kind of a trend. You know, will school ever get to the point where it's just a bunch of rotten apple kids? The rotten apple incorrigible kids of poor or harried people who don't help out school teachers. The school teacher will be so upset. School teachers aren't even saying for several years now that the kids are getting worse and that the parents aren't being very supportive. Of course, it's partially the school teacher's fault. When a school teacher turns you in for spanking your kids, you know, I saw something. I just happened to see the bottom of one of these kids, and I see a hand on it, and I'm going to turn in that parent. And you go, you know, that's actually working against yourself. I said, because that's pretty much an adult asserting authority over a child. That's almost the only thing that you have is the fact that a parent is making sure that that kid listens to other adults, like you, school teacher. And as soon as you take away their ability to do that, you're also killing your own ability to do it because you can't spank that kid. Actually, that's not true. You know, school teachers are trusted much more than parents are. And so when a school teacher, they have to go through a little bit of a process, but they can still spank a kid and have a kid spank. They probably can't spank them. But that helps in the discipline department. I think it's hilarious because it's something that society has said parents now cannot do. You know, it's not allowed. Only authority figures, well vetted authority figures, which I think is hilarious. School teacher is, you know, or a school administrator, which is typically a coach. And that's why they get coaches to do it, is because a school teacher has been trained and coddled not to ever be capable of doing this. But a sports coach is absolutely kind of these kinds of guys. Let me tell you, if you want to know who has a tendency to abuse children, I said, put coach in front of their name. And you will have a person that in any other setting would be cast as a child abuser. Except you can't do that to coaches. Coaches are the last people who can physically discipline children. Besides, I guess, police officers, although now we figure out how to make it so police officers can't really do it. There are no adult authority figures anymore, except for sports coaches. Everybody else has been stripped of that power. And that's terrible, because kids are running amok, and kids have no, you know, don't require discipline. Kids, they don't have it because it's just not done to them. And so that's a whole lot of what we're seeing now, is crazed lunatic children becoming adults that have absolutely no self-restraint. You know, you say, well, they're abandoning our culture, and you go, you never taught them your culture. You gave up on that when you said that you can't thank them, or when you said you can't do this and that, when you basically have to do what you said to get them to do what you hope you want them to do. You're going, wow. You're going, no wonder you guys are stuck. No wonder it's going to be third world countries where you don't get these kinds of things. And, you know, the people who actually run our world are people who don't have any compunctions at all about disciplining their children. That's a nice way to say it. About physically teaching your child what's appropriate and what's not. Anyway, so, I think I'm going to come back and watch. After our little watch thing, and I'll have to mow the lawn then. Yeah. So I think we figured out. We got rid of my doubt problem. Okay, well, I'm sorry. We're still recording. I wanted to stop. Talk to you later. Bye.